came across a quote recently which goes something along the lines of this. Most people look at the world believing their mind is like a mirror, more or less accurately reflecting things the way that they are, without actually appreciating that the mind is the primary creator of that world. This is not new information. I mean, certainly from the perspective of this teaching, the Buddha was always talking about understanding the world. I mean, he spoke about understanding the world. He was always speaking about understanding the world of experience. The way our world of experience is something that is being created and recreated, shaped and reshaped, moment to moment through our days. And yet the astonishing thing is that even as we know this, we find ourselves getting so trapped in the world of the moment. Even when that world of the moment we know is so changeable. You can love something in one moment, hate exactly the same thing in the next. You can come into this room and smile at your meditation seat in one moment, come in and frown at the same seat the next moment. How we go through life, you know, so assured of our constructions. And we say, you know, you are like this, I am like that. The world is like that. People are like this. People are like that. And then, moments later, our view changes. Now, of course, what is astonishing, despite the number of times we see this, we get trapped in the view of the moment. We're sure it's there forever, and we're sure it's quite an accurate representation of the way things actually are. So when we speak about sort of liberating the moment or awakening the moment, it's actually awakening our world of the moment, our world of experience of the moment, our world of construction of the moment. In many ways, those constructions will happen as long as perception is happening, as long as our sense doors and thoughts are operating. We will find ourselves shaping the world in particular ways. And then the real question, and we touched on this before lunch, is not to imagine a world where all of this stops. But actually to look at the constructions and to look at where they are really held within the grip of identification and craving and aversion and ill will and confusion, and when our world of the moment is actually shaped by insight, by compassion, by empathy, by care, by generosity, and to understand that these indeed may be choices within our own mind. So looking at liberating the moment or imprisoning or binding, contracting the moment, these are processes that are occurring throughout the day. And it's actually really helpful. I mean, meditative practice really helps us to have that sensitivity inwardly, to begin to have some intimacy with those processes, to know the process of contractedness, when our world begins to be shrink, to be fixed in views, and very often to begin to see for ourselves that those contracted worlds, held together by identification, are most often the worlds where there is the most suffering, the most struggle, the most anguish. That when our world of the moment is instead shaped by all that leads to the end of suffering, by compassion, by care, by mindfulness, that those are the moments actually when we see there's a marked absence of struggle, of anguish. There is a greater sense of connectedness, a greater sense of embodiment. And it's really, this is a process we can actually really only understand for ourselves by having that acquaintance with our own heart, mind, body process, which is always occurring. And I think in this teaching, I think it really points out that in every moment of our life, we are actually practicing something. And we can be practicing quite intentionally the cultivation of all that is liberating, that is healing, that is helpful. And in the moments when that's not happening, it's actually quite useful to look at what is being practiced. And most often, what is being practiced in those moments are some of the very familiar and sometimes tired and tiring impulses and habit patterns that can arise and re-arise moment to moment. The important point here is that all things arise and re-arise. That dukkha or struggle or anguish is not some kind of constant state. It is something that is created and recreated moment to moment. Just as kindness, compassion, care, empathy, patience are qualities that are created, born and reborn moment to moment. So that there is nothing that is static. We see that externally. And there is nothing that is static within our world of experience. And of course, the great gift of mindfulness, I feel, is that it does enable us to make choices. It does. That is a great quality of freedom. The capacity to choose what is being practiced, what is being embodied, what is cultivated in this moment. To the moments when we have not that freedom, we see for ourselves, these are the moments when we're most tied to confusion and to impulse and to habit patterns. And the work of this practice, of course, is to come out of that sense of just being bound, being imprisoned, and to exercise the freedom of that in a way, that choice, what is being practiced in this moment. I sometimes think of this path as this kind of, well, it is a developmental path in truth. But I think the place often where many people start is this quality, this sense of choicelessness. You know, I open my mouth and words fly out that I'd rather not say. You know, I find myself just reacting impulsively and I look back and I think, I'd rather that didn't happen. You know, we find ourselves making choices that keep leading us into the same places of confusion. And this is a kind of, it's a terrible feeling of helplessness, isn't it? It's a feeling of choicelessness. It's a feeling of helplessness, of almost just sort of being driven through life by the engine of our impulses. A friend of mine, a neuropsychologist, refers to it as unconscious incompetence. Then we see actually with practice it changes, doesn't it? It may not be linear, it may not be constant, but it does change, doesn't it? We actually start to see there are in more and more moments in our life choice. Rather than dump those words on the world, I might just restrain them. It's not so bad. You know, rather than, you know, every time I have a moment of discontent heading for the fridge or the remote control, might be able to be with this. Rather than just ignoring the person struggling in the road, I might actually be able to pause and help. We start to see that movement into that capacity to choose what is being cultivated in that moment. And yet we often still fall in the holes. We fall in the holes. It's not linear. It's not always reliable. And my same friend refers to this as unconscious competence. No. Conscious incompetence, sorry. Conscious incompetence. Hmm? Sometimes we even know what we're doing and we do it anyway, you know. And that's a difficult place in practice. It's a difficult place in the path, you know. It's often quite painful, isn't it, to see where there's this kind of misalignment between our intentions and our values and aspirations, and sometimes how that doesn't get manifested in our life. And yet that is the place where choice starts to happen. And those are the little moments of freedom, the little moments of awakening, the little moments where we see that potential to liberate the moment. And actually the more that is practiced, the more does that move into a different level of choicelessness. And I think that's what embodiment is, where there is a naturalization of our intentions, our aspirations, our values, into our words, our act, our thoughts, our ways of relating, where it's not even requiring intention anymore, that this is actually something that is lived. Again, my same friend refers to this as conscious competence. But it's looking at that middle place, and I would imagine that that's the place many of you find yourselves in, around that moment of choice, having sufficient mindfulness to know what's going on, having sufficient mindfulness to know the what contractedness feels like and what openness feels like, to know the difference between aversion and kindness, and to have that choice about what path is actually going to be walked in that moment. And that is the process of liberating the moment. And that is the process that actually naturalizes into that deeper level of choicelessness and embodiment. So again, it takes